You are listening to The Tenants on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. To support us, visit patreon.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenants. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Stark Realm. How are you today, Stark?
Pretty good.
It's been a tough week for us, in full admission. We are recording this on Friday after plenty of tech issues on my end of random computer failures, and Stark got to start off this one with trying to murder Steam, I believe, was what was happening.
Yeah, it's been a fun day.
Yeah. Hey, they happen, these oddities, so we appreciate you guys sticking with us. So again, we are recording this on Friday. I guess that means we get to give you guys the news that there are the Alphique banker and merchant on the store. Stark, what are your thoughts on these guys?
I think they're freaking adorable. I'm having a hard time with them, though, because they are the full $50.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you already own Tithys and Nuzuma, then these two are pretty hard sell. I was really kind of hoping that there'd be some sort of synergy discount where, like, if you own the banker, the other banker is going to be reduced cost, and there's not any of that. So we'll see where they go from here. It's something I'm going to keep an eye out for when they go on sale or when crowns go on sale, because, like I said, they're adorable and I do really want those, but not right now.
I feel the same way, because, you know, I'm not the biggest, like, cat person and a Khajiit person, so it doesn't really fit my theme, but I have the gotta catch them all sort of vibe going on. Like, I'm like, I need... arguably, because they are interactable NPCs, that does make them more attractive, right? Like, It's kind of cool. You can stick them in your houses. They can do other things. I've not yet seen a house that has all four of them in it, by the way. Nuzuma, Tithys, and the two Alphique. But they are taking up kind of limited slots in the house, though, I guess. So that's a little iffy. But this is, kind of one of those things that you could start to fill out your house with.
You do have 10 slots. You've also got three Khajiit. These two are actually the second and third Khajiit assistants.
Who's the other one? Oh, the, yeah,
Pahari.
Shadowy supplier, whatever.
Yeah, not the shadowy supplier. Yeah, the fence.
Yeah.
The mobile fence that is not worth using and you should never touch for any reason, but you can put them in your house because it looks cool.
Zenimax, can we please get that thing fixed? Like, can you bring it back in line with how Tithys and Nizima work, that they, the fence doesn't, just to make it so they can't fence the goods, but they can sell whatever that thing, or they can't launder, but they can, just get rid of that stupid extra, fee on there. It's nasty. That being said, today we are going to dive into tanking, the last part of our three-part mini-series here. 2 weeks ago, we covered DPS. Last week, we covered a very long explanation of healing. And today, due to time constraints, we're going to keep this tanking one in line. And there's always the possibility, if you guys want it, that we could try and do like a 2.0 or something of these episodes, like an extra higher level up or something like that. I've heard someone on Twitter ask, can you guys go super in-depth in tanking? And I was like, probably not this week, but potentially in the future.
Probably could do that in the future, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it would be kind of a cool, like, next level or something. And we have a lot of friends we can bring in for all this stuff. Like, we always drag Zynote in here at some point. Just yank them in. And we've got other people that want to get on the show here, too. So we need to start planning out some of those spots. But I'm going to let Stark take the lead on this one. I did last week, and Stark knows a lot more about tanking than I, so it makes sense. Do you want to start us off talking about the basics of what a tank does, Stark?
Well, actually, the first question for you is, did you ever tank in another MMO?
No, actually. I've never tanked before.
Okay, so tanking in ESO is a little different, and the first thing to point out, like when you're coming to ESO fresh and you're like, how do you tank in this, is there are no AoE taunts. And there is no aggro table system, basically. Like, there's no, you increase your aggro generation through one system or another. And that's not what taunting in ESO does. Taunting in ESO is a hard taunt. You hit the boss with it, and the boss will focus on you. They will ignore everything else. Now, a lot of bosses have specific moves that they can use that will ignore taunts when they're picking their targets, but that's specific boss mechanics. Otherwise, if you tag a boss with a taunt, they're locked on you for the next 15 seconds.
Interesting.
And you cannot, like, just as a stamina thing, you cannot taunt everybody in the room. If you've got ads coming in, you cannot area taunt. You can't grab everybody with your taunt and just pull them in on you. If you've got a lot of people in the room and you need to manage a crowd, you actually need to do this with crowd control abilities. You need to do this with lockdowns. So roots, snares, things to slow them down, all the DPS burn them. And that's very different from taunting in pretty much every other MMO I've ever played. And I think also it's true with WoW, but I haven't touched that. So I get that sort of secondhand. But it does create a very different structure for tanking in ESO. And what this means is that as a tank, your job is to maintain control of the boss with taunts, maintain control over the adds using crowd control, and moving the adds around sometimes. So if you're sitting there and you've got adds running around, you want to grab them and pull them in. And there's a couple of ways you can do this depending on your class, and we'll get into that in a second. But the basic concept, and what we'll be calling this, is chaining. Like, you'll grab them and you'll pull them in. And partially that's because the DKs have an ability called Fiery Grip that actually is chains, so you'll latch onto somebody and pull. And for most of the game's life cycle, that's been the primary way to do this. So there have been some changes in the last couple of years.
Wow. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, like I said, I never tanked in other games, but it always seems very different. And I'll hear that being told to players getting in here, especially no AoE taunts in ESO sometimes strikes people in a weird way, because that was a big thing in WoW. And I remember as a DPS in WoW that you had to, you know, try and behave with the taunt table and the threat table, I should say, so that you weren't over pulling it from the tank. So that's a very different system here. Wow.
Something else that's interesting about this, and it's worth keeping in mind, because there's only hard taunts. Mm-hmm. If you've got a DPS using an ability or using a weapon that can hard taunt, they can pull the boss off of the tank. It's not the tank's fault. It's the tank, you know, the taunt is still active. They've just lost control. This actually happened to me in a random normal a couple of days ago, where I was trying to figure out what was going on with the boss. And it's like, oh, turns out one of the DPS was using an ice staff.
Again, why we warn against the dreaded ice staff there.
Yeah. So with taunts, there's basically three that you're going to worry about. Mm-hmm. And you're going to want two of these, and you're probably not going to care about the third. Puncture is on the one hand and shield skill line. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's just short range. You jab somebody. In most cases, you'll apply both the physical resist and spell resist major debuffs. Mm-hmm. So it will actually make the enemy, whether it's the boss or not, take significantly more damage from the DPS. You do really want this in your wheelhouse. And a lot of the times when we're talking about, you have to have sword and board to tank, like that's a tanking weapon. Mm-hmm. This is why. This ability is absolutely central to the game.
Gotcha.
The other one coming out of the Undaunted skill line is Inner Fire. And this is also absolutely vital for a tank to have. You need both of these. You don't need them both in the same bar. In fact, you don't even need them both slotted at the same time. But you do need to get to the point where you have access to both of these. The difference is Inner Fire can taunt at range.
Ah. Okay.
So in fights where the tank cannot sit on the adds or cannot sit on the boss, Inner Fire will let you grab somebody and pull them off. And so you can taunt them at range. Now, this doesn't apply the debuffs, right? So there's still a solid reason for puncture. You'd still need that. You can't just go, okay, I'm just going to do Inner Fire all the time, unless you've got another method to apply those debuffs. But these two form the core of what every tank should have access to, especially by the time you get to end game. The third one I'm going to single out here is the ice staff heavy attack, which we just mentioned. If you want to use this, and I actually put in the notes, don't use this. If you want to use this, like, in addition to everything else, that's fine. The ice staff actually has reasons to be in your toolkit, and it's not a bad weapon for tanks. However, you do not want to rely on the heavy attack from the ice staff to deliver a taunt. It's an extra bonus as the tank. Like, it's a free taunt, and if you've got an ad over there and you just don't want to spend resources and you've got the time to do a heavy attack, go for it. But most of the time in dungeons, especially as you're getting into end game, you're not going to have the time to just sit there and heavy attack to attach a taunt to somebody. You're going to have to be doing other things. So it's there. It is available. And like when we'll get into the crowd control abilities in a moment, the elemental blockade with a frost staff is actually really nice because it locks everything in place. So it's a hard CC. They don't go anywhere. However, other than that, it is limited. You're not going to want to use this for taunting. And you're also probably not going to want the passive, which I don't have on hand right now, that will convert the block cost from stam to mag. Mm. Usually want to keep blocking on your stam pool anyway, even if you get the staff up, simply because you're going to be doing other things with your mag pool. You don't want to run out of that. But that might be a little bit more specialized to what you're doing with your build. So crowd control abilities, like I said, it'll keep the adds in one place. In some cases, you can use this when you're going into your chains to hold them in place and then pull them, because these are actually on separate cooldowns. But otherwise, you need to understand you can't keep something held in place indefinitely. So sooner or later, they're going to get loose. Ideally, the DPS should be able to burn them down. And moving into the next section with chains, if you can lock them in place and then pull them to a single location where they can just die in the AoE from the DPS, because this is something we talked about 2 weeks ago with ground lays, like you want your DPS to put down your ground lays on the boss. Mm-hmm. As the tank, you want to be able to chain enemies into the boss so that they get killed by those same AoEs.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so there is still a significant focus on controlling where enemies are and making sure they're all in one place on you, but you can't simply sit there, as in another MMO, and just grab them all with an AoE taunt.
Yep.
Also, part of why there isn't an AoE taunt, because it would be freaking boring. You would just activate the AoE taunt, they would run towards you, and they would all die.
I've heard that some people cringe when they hear, I think most people cringe when they hear we don't have an AoE taunt. And mm-hmm. then the other, you know, the tankers in chat that are like, yeah, you know, I've done this for a while. They go, it's a lot more fun in this game. So mm-hmm. I kind of see that initial cringe. Then the veterans are all like, no, this is actually a better thing. You don't want that AoE taunt as much as you think you do.
Well, something, this is, I'm specifically coming from Secret World on this, but I assume it's also true in WoW. As a tank, you end up in competition with a DPS.
Correct.
Like, you're not working together. You're actually working against them, because yes. if their DPS gets high enough, they will pull adds or the boss off of you.
Correct.
And that can be really aggravating when that happens. And in the case of ESO, there's nothing like that. It's actually, even if you're pissed with another player, it's really hard to work against them in a dungeon.
True. You can't even like selectively unheal people in the game. Like, it just targets them anyway. So you're right. There's a lot less in group competition.
Yeah. The only thing that you can screw up, like as the DPS, is you can taunt. You know, you can taunt targets off of the tank, but that's very specific, and it's not really harming the tank. It's just harming
you. It's going to murder you. It is going to murder you.
Yeah. So, like, when we're looking at these things, and like these three things are the core of the tank in ESO, right?
Yeah.
Controlling where they are, pulling them together. There is a set that applies taunt. This is actually coming out of a discussion on the forums the other day. There is a set that applies taunt when you use a gap closer. It does not work with the werewolf, like, because the werewolf pounce is a gap closer, but it doesn't work with that. Mm. That's intentional, because while the werewolf can take a lot of damage, mm-hmm. it can't taunt anything, and it's not supposed to be able to taunt anything because it can't do the rest of the job. It can't control where things are. It can't pull things to them. All it can do is sit there and take a bunch of damage.
Ah.
So, like, this is something that specifically came up a couple of days ago where you're like, we should have werewolf tanks. I'm like, that would have to be an entirely new skill line. So, I'm game for it.
Right.
But that would have to be a new skill line.
I mean, lore wise, it would be fun. I'll give it that. Mm-hmm. Like, that'd be cool. I mean, werewolves are kind of beefy and, you know, whatever. And yeah, but okay, if they can't do the job, we don't want them as tanks.
Exactly.
Yeah. DPS.
And much like healers, you really do not want to see your tank wolf out in a dungeon. That's a bad sign.
I'm going to go full werewolf stam healer. Yikes.
You'll heal yourself. Enjoy. I'll give it this, though. Like, they can be a lot of fun in four DPS groups, right? Like, everybody's running them and it's like everything bounces off each other. Yeah. But it is something where it's like, okay, now we don't have a tank. We don't have a healer.
Yeah. Don't wolf out as your tank, please, chat.
Please don't. So there's two other things they need. The first one is self-heals. in a lot of situations in the game, you're going to find yourself as the tank away from the healer, or the healer is going to have to focus on the DPS to keep them from dying. Mm-hmm. And simply put, you need to be able to survive while you don't have a healer babysitting you. This isn't true for all content per se. There's some situations where you certainly can have a healer babysitting you. And I'm even thinking of a trial where you specifically as a tank will sit there with a healer attached to you.
Yeah.
And you're their only, you're their life.
Yep, yep.
But that's the exception rather than the rule. And even in situations like that, you're still going to want to have the ability to heal yourself. Where the game is right now, pretty much everybody should be running a self-heal of some kind most of the time, simply because it's convenient. It helps with your own survival. Anytime the healer lapses, you're not instantly dead, hopefully. But it's absolutely critical the tank has a self-heal. And something we'll get into later, I think, but all of the classes have a health scaling self-heal somewhere. And I think in one case or two cases, it's actually a shield rather than direct health recovery. But still, those are critical things to look for a tank, because you do want health to be able to take the hits. The other thing you're going to need are, well, you're going to want are buffs and debuffs. We mentioned this a minute ago when I was talking about, you know, how important puncture is. You want to be able to debuff the boss. You want to be able to debuff the adds. You want to be able to buff party members. Now, specifically what you're looking for, you've got a lot of flexibility. Major breach, major fracture off of pierce armor. So one of the morphs of puncture is really nice. But after that, there's a lot of different options on this. Part of the reason sometimes you'll see Alkosh listed as you should be running this as your tank is it applies an additional significant debuff to the boss's resistances. You'll also see this with the Crusher Enchant, because a lot of times you'll use the Crusher Enchant for your weapons on a tank. And the purpose there is it's also reducing the target's resistances. So you're trying to make the target take as much damage as possible by reducing their physical and spell resist as much as you can. And this creates a strong focus to simply stack these buffs up and hit as hard as you can. It's like the rest of your team will hit as hard as they can. So what you need for buffs and debuffs varies, especially with buffs, right? Like you can run stuff. Ebon Armory is a set that you get in Crypto Hearts that will increase the health of all party members within a certain radius around you. So that's actually a nice buff. It's only about 1,000 hit points. And what you're probably aware of once you get into vet content is 1,000 hit points, if you've got it calculated right, can be the difference between being above or below the one-shot threshold. But if you're not close to the one-shot threshold, it doesn't matter that much. Still, it's nice to be able to give that to party members.
That does actually make sense.
Yeah. Also, something we were talking about healers. This is part of the reason why with tanks, you have a lot of gear variability. Like you have choices, because if you've got a set, even if it looks like it's a DPS or a heal set that's primarily focused around applying buffs and debuffs, it's probably viable for a tank. Again, the example of Alkosh a minute ago, that's actually a DPS set. It's a medium armor set, comes out of Mov Lurkage. You can absolutely put it on a tank, and for a while it's been one of the de facto go-tos for tanking. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you also mentioned mending too, right? Like
that last week. Yeah, I like that. So as it's a heal set, right? And the primary focus is you reduce the target's weapon damage. So you reduce their outgoing damage. You reduce their outgoing weapon damage. And at least on NPCs, that applies to all of their outgoing damage. And the downside of it is, like, and this lasts for 3 seconds after you cast an AoE heal. The downside being, it only goes from 10 meters from you. Now, if you're a healer and you've got a pretty tight structure for your players and you're within 10 meters of the boss, mm-hmm. that'll work, right? Like you'll actually be debuffing the boss every time you pop out a heal. However, if you've got a larger, looser structure, it's possible the only person that's going to be able to fire this off and hit the boss with it is the tank.
Yeah.
So it's only got 3 seconds. So what you're doing here is if you're going to use this, you've got to click heal, because, again, you have to have a self heal. And in certain classes, for example, a Templar, the Warden, or any class using Vigor, you can pop off an AoE heal around yourself that'll proc mending. And if you're the tank and you know you're going to get a hit in a second and you have a pretty good grasp of how much damage it's going to do, you can actually make life a little easier for everybody else by reducing that damage before it goes. As the tank, you usually don't have the resources to just spam these things, so you can't sit there and just pop off Breath of Life or pop off any of the Warden AoE heals just constantly. Like, you don't have the resources for that. But if you know you're about to take a hit, you know, like, you can put mending on the target, or you know that the DPS is going to take a hit. And this is kind of what we're talking about, right, with buffs and debuffs. And there's a legitimate justification argument as to whether mending isn't a good idea on the tank, simply right, because is the buff valuable enough to chew up five slots?
Good question. But, and we had someone in Discord, by the way, sorry, in the feedback channel, that was defending it the other day. So there's some valid, look at that, some good conversation going on in the Discord about these episodes, people.
Yeah. Love and it. Again, I actually like that for a tank. So, like, I realize I've just been coming down on that for a good few minutes, but like, I do like that for the tank because I think it's a legitimate option to put on them, especially when you start getting into trial situations where you've got multiple setups with two healers and two tanks. Another one that I've actually run is Sanctuary. So that's we mentioned that with the healers, I think, didn't we?
I think we did, yeah. Because Sanctuary is traditionally thought of as a healer set. Yep.
Yeah. And that's one where it's like, it's actually kind of interesting because it's a heal received, heal done, or no, it's a healing done, max health healing done bonus, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
And then it applies the healing received bonus off the green orbs. I just run that on one of my tanks for off tanking. So that's, you're applying that buff, the healing received buff, to everybody in the party. Now your healers don't have to worry about running that.
Yeah, that's extremely solid choice.
Yeah, and especially when you get into trials, you can start to, and depending on your group composition, you can start getting kind of weird with your tank loadouts. So long as you can actually survive incoming damage.
There you go. That's the key, huh?
Yeah. So I think with that, that's basically the overview. Should we look at the classes?
Let's do it. We're just going to give like a much lighter overview this week than than we did last.
Yeah. Yeah. These are going to be very abbreviated. And I think the idea here is, like, there are strengths and weaknesses for each class when it comes to tanking. We hate to say, you know, or, well, I shouldn't say we hate to say, we love saying that you can do everything on every class. That's true with tanks, but in two specific cases, it's much harder. So we've got the Dragon Knights, where it's actually really easy. They have chains in class. Like, they're the ones that actually are the reason we call it chains, because, like I mentioned a minute ago, Fiery Grip actually is your character throws out this, you know, sort of steel dart with chains coming off of it, and then you pull the target into you. Also, amusingly, and this is something you missed, Kyle, it used to be the first one of the first powers they unlocked, which meant you'd go around someplace like Stone Falls or Glenumbra, and you'd be fighting something in melee as like a Nightblade or a Sork or whatever. And in would come this DK that would just grab it and yank it away from you.
Oh, gosh.
It's since been moved further down the tree, which is a little irritating just for the purposes of if you're trying to tank, you don't have access to it as soon. But it's still, it is actually there. It's, this is the reason we call it chains, and this is one of the things they've got. Also, Unrelenting Grip, this specific morph, is free if you can't move the target. So it does a little bit of damage, which doesn't matter much for the tank, but you get your, you actually get a refund for the magicka spent to cast it, which makes it really useful for DKs, especially because there's also a minor expedition bonus for casting it, which means you will sometimes see DKs hit something with chains that they know full well cannot be pulled, just so they move faster.
Interesting.
DKs also have a point blank AoE immobilize called Dark Talons. So this allows them to, they pull stuff in with chains and then they lock it in place. So remember we were talking about a minute ago, you want to pull stuff into the AoE so they'll die. This is how you do it. You pull them in, you talons them, or you pull a couple in and then you talons them all at once. finally, the Dragonites have fantastic self-heals and personal shields. They've got some shields that can pop over on other players. We talked about that when we were talking about them with healing, but they really are just masters of taking a lot of damage, which makes them really nice for tanks. And looking back at where the game was originally, the DK was supposed to be the tank, like supposed to be the tank class. So it's not surprising that even now they're a very solid tank class. And if you want to learn how to tank from the word go, they're a very good place to begin.
That does make sense. And I mean, even yesterday, I recommended someone. They said, where do I start off when it comes to tanking? And I said, well, if you want to start the absolute, you know, bare bones, this is, you know, the DK is a good way to start it.
Yep. So moving past that, we've got the Templar, which is your favorite.
Yes.
And they don't look that good for this.
No, not on surface.
So they don't have any chains in class, which that's actually going to be a consistent theme for a couple of classes, but they can't move things around. Now, the Fighters Guild does provide chains now to everybody with Silver Leash. That's a morph of the Silver Bolts ability. Mm-hmm. So you fire it and then you use it again. You fire it and it pulls them in now. But you do have to morph it. There for a while, it was you had to fire it and then you had to use it again to pull them in. I don't know why I was suddenly thinking of that mechanic now. But anyway, so you do have access to chains, but you don't have them innately. Also, you do have to pay stamina to use them, as opposed to it being magicka, which is a little bit undesirable, because as a tank, you're going to be using your stam to block, and then you're going to be using Silver Leash to pull things in. That's pulling out of your block pool. However, it's still there. The real death knell for the Templar, though, is they have no in-class CCs. So you're going to be using stuff like Time Stop, or if you're using an ice staff, you're going to be using stuff like the elemental blockade off of the ice. So you can get these, but it's not as easy and convenient as, say, a Templar, or sorry, say a DK, where you just pop one out right off your class skill line.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, they've got a really nice health scaling shield. Like I said a minute ago, like they have one that, you know, there are a couple where it's like the health scaling thing is actually a shield instead of damage, or instead of healing. And the Templar has one where it's a shield. They've got a couple of nice party buffs, and a lot of this was stuff we actually talked about with the healer, because it's still there and it's still viable. But you can get that from your tank. So they're a very survivable class. The only downside is, again, there's almost no CC.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Nightblades end up in a similar place, too. So moving on. They have no chains, which isn't a serious problem. And they have almost no in-class CC. They've got a few stuns in class, but that's about it. So Nightblades are also in an awkward place for tanking. The trade-off is they've got some excellent self-heals and survivability. Like they can be very chunky. They've got a few party buffs, but nothing as convenient as simply, okay, I click a thing and then everybody gets a buff. They've got some stuff like an ultimate where you can put it down and everybody gets protection inside of it. I think it's minor protection. So they'll take less damage, but as a tank, it's a little awkward. However, Nightblades can make for god tier PvP tanks. I think we actually talked about this either in between or on the last episode, because you used to have a thing with Sap Essence where it was like, yeah, you could make a virtually unkillable Nightblade tank for PvP.
Yeah, we did mention that. Yep.
Yeah. part of the reason why I'm sadly actually coming down on the Nightblade a little bit is because they were overperforming in PvP, and as a result, they took a nerf. And yeah, it's unfortunate. Nightblade tanking is doable, and I've met a few people that actually run them preferentially, but they are harder to run.
I mean, that again, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. A friend of mine runs one when he tanks, so, and it works out really well for him. But yeah, I think you're right. Totally. It's, you know. Yeah.
Also, with these two, I mentioned Time Stop a minute ago. That's actually an awkward one to use. Most of the time when we're talking about these ground-based CCs, like the holding enemies in place, most of the time that's just going to be an instant cast. You just put it out there and you're done. Time Stop doesn't give you that option. It's either got a cast time or you stick it out there and it delays before activating.
Oh.
So it's And it's also very more expensive now than it used to be. So you can't afford to spam it. And between these things, like, you can do it this way, but it's awkward. So, like, and that applies to both the Templar and the Nightblade. These are the two that are otherwise really good tank options, but do not have the CC options. So it makes tanking on them really challenging.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And like we said, it makes sense based on how these classes were put into the game that they would be kind of that little bit of a, I don't want to say afterthought, but unintentionally not thought of that way. So that kind of makes sense that they don't have all the tools in their toolkit.
Yeah. Which is funny because we're going to one that really kind of does and is still actually pretty difficult to run for most people. So the Sorcerer tank. Mm-hmm. You see many of those?
No, I don't think I can picture anyone in particular that runs one.
Okay, I run one, but other than that.
I see you on your warden
Yeah, usually my warden, yeah. Or maybe my DK also. So here's the fun thing with the Sorc tank, because the Sorc tank is kind of bonkers if you know what you're doing, but it's not easy. You don't have in-class chains, right? So this is consistent theme of the original four classes that was unique to the DK. You can get it with Silver Leash now, so that works. They have a ranged CC. And that's in case coming off of the dark magic tree. This does a couple of things that are kind of interesting offhand. One of them is you actually get a health scaling heal for each target you hit with it.
Ooh.
So, and that's coming off of a passive. It's not coming off the ability itself. So we were talking about, you know, the importance of passives earlier. This is, you know, the previous episodes. This is an example of that. It heals you when you lock adds up. Also, and we'll see this again when we get to the Necromancer, these ranged CCs, like these column CCs, are actually really nice for controlling adds, because as a DK, you chain something and then you talons it, you chain something, you talons it, you chain something, you talons it, right? Or you just chain, and then talons and hope they don't get out of range before you've completed, right?
Yeah.
With a Sorc or Necromancer, you put the AoE down and it locks them up, but you can still chain them. So you lock them down and then you pull them in.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's a little easier on that. And it's a lot easier to manage when you've got enemies over in that general direction that you just need to stop them. So especially in situations where you can't afford to move adds in onto the boss for whatever reason, you can just lock them up and let the DPS deal with them out there on their own terms. So one thing where the Sorc is not fantastic is survivability. It does have a self heal, but the self heal has to be double barred because it's the clan fear. So one of the weird things, and this came up when we were talking about the healers last week with the Sorc, is one of the critical pieces of their toolkit comes off their pets. And the clan fear is a really good self heal for a tank, but it means it has to be on both bars.
That's a real tricky thing, asking for it to be on two bars at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So beyond that, they still have a pretty excellent shield in Daedric Ward. Now, this is fun. Or not Daedric Ward, Hardened Ward. This is fun because it used to be you'd run annulment, or not an annulment, harness magic on a tank anyway, like for the shield. You can't do that anymore because you need the light armor slots open. Like, you need to have 5 light armor slots to use it. However, because this is a class ability with a similar effect, you can just put it on there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Also, I don't use the shield personally. So this is, I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, that's great, but I don't touch it. But it is there, and it is actually a pretty viable way to give yourself an additional buffer whenever you want, just out of your magic pool. Additionally, they have a very limited set of party buffs, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And the one thing that is actually really nice, so you can throw the Storm Atronach at targets, and that will give any DPS that picks up the synergy Major Berserk. Which is a really good buff if the DPS is going to be in melee range, which is not that high of an ask if you've got Stam DPS and they're willing to pick up synergies. That last one can get kind of tricky sometimes. Certainly run enough groups with Stam DPS where they'll just kind of ignore the synergies. And it's like, this is extra damage waiting for you. And they're like, oh. So it can be really good on that range, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
And finally, they are actually very mobile. And this is probably one of the highest skill thresholds for the class. The bolt escape ability allows them to basically gap close to empty space. It's just a jump straight ahead on to a specific location in front of you. And with practice, there's a lot of situations where you can actually use this to circumvent situations or to just basically be in two places at once. I think, I don't remember, have you been on AA runs where I've been running? Yeah, I don't think you've been running in AA when I've been doing my Sorc tank.
I don't think
so. One thing that happens on the Valerial fight where you have to split up, you know, and everybody has to go out and deal with the ones on the columns. As a Sorc tank, you can use Pierce Armor and then bolt escape to the next one, shank them, start running, shank them, bolt escape, shank, and just keep doing this around the room. And it does actually cut down on your travel time significantly.
That's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. Also, I think I mentioned this with Zynode earlier. Like, there are situations where you've got, like, these killer walls that will come at you in various vet dungeons. Well, various dungeons. Mm-hmm. You can bolt escape through those if you know the timing.
Ah, that's pretty cool, too.
Like, yeah, so it is this thing where it's like, this is a really cool skill. This is also a skill that will kill you. Like, while you're learning to use it, it will kill you. So it's like, I have a soft spot for Sorcs because they actually require a lot of finesse to play as tanks, but they can be really fun. Okay, so with that, we've got, those are the original four classes. And then we've got the Warden, which is the first class that was really designed to do all three jobs and gave each one its own skill line. I think, yeah, you've seen me run a Warden.
Oh, yes. Tank. I've seen a good chunk of Warden tanks in my time.
Yeah. So there's a downside here. They've got in-class chains, and they're awkward. I think we talked about this last week, too, because we were talking about the that Fungal Bloom. I think it's the Fungal Bloom ability or something, like where you put it down, and then after a delay, it fires. Yes. Same thing here, except it's on their chains. So Frozen Gate, you put Frozen Gate out there, it puts a trap on the floor. And as a Knight's Touch, you can actually put three of them out there simultaneously. And when an ad or the boss wanders, well, when an ad wanders over, the boss will have CC immunity. But when an ad wanders over, they'll get yanked to wherever you are right now. I actually still run Silver Leash on my Warden instead of running Frozen Gate because it is awkward and hard to use. There's situations where it's nice to be able to just put it out there and not have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. But I would rather just be able to grab and pull. So on top of that, they've got 2-point blank AoE immobilizes. One of them is an ult, which is a little bit less useful, but it's still useful as an ultimate, the Blizzard ult. And then the other one is Gripping Shards. You have to morph it to actually apply a lockdown. Once you've morphed it to do that, it functions basically the same as the DK ability. Like, there's some distinctions between the two. DK actually offers a synergy that can allow other players to deal additional damage to the target. But in this case, it's just sort of you grab them in, you lock them in place. When it comes to shields and self-heals, the shields are a little bit more limited. Their in-class heals on the tank tree are pretty limited. However, because this is a Warden and because they are actually functional as a heal class, it's entirely viable to run stuff like trees.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I don't have a self-heal. It's really good, except, oh, wait, I do. Splat. And it's cheap.
And I mean, it's a effective spell too with that. Like, that's a very nice way to save yourself. Or, I mean, with how cheap it is, I mean, you could be running that in almost full rotation in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know.
That's well, and I know with practice on a Nightblade, you can absolutely get full rotation up for on 75 ultimate.
Yeah.
In 7 seconds. So, yeah, it's absolutely doable. Also with the Warden, because you've got those heals, you do have access to an AoE heal in kit. So you can do that. Like we were talking about the mending popping earlier, like you can pop mending with that, or you can pop other sets that require you to heal somebody to have their effect. And they've even got a passive, which I believe is in the healing tree, which will apply, I think it's minor vitality. So it's plus 10% to max health whenever you heal somebody. And I think that lasts for like 8 seconds, something like that. Well, here's the thing about this. You've got in-class self-heals. Mm-hmm. You can just simply increase your max health.
Good point. Great point.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a difference here with the buffs that you can provide. Because with the DK, a lot of stuff, like you've got the flaming weapons ability, which will actually buff damage for everybody else. Like it'll increase their outgoing damage. You do have the option to shield them, but... like mostly when you're looking at it, it's like, okay, these buffs are offensive in nature. The warden's usually the other way around. Like the primary example is the ice armor they put out. So that will actually provide basically the tank resist buffs, the major ward, major resolve buffs. That'll apply that to party members also. So you can make everybody a little bit more tanky, hopefully, if they're not already receiving those buffs from elsewhere. But it's basically a little bit more defensive than DK as a tank.
Yeah, they seem like it. Again, very, very popular option out there. I'll mm-hmm. see people running around a lot of the time with it. I think that was even Freddy's second, or that was his previous favorite before the Necromancer. And so I see a lot of Warden tanking.
Yeah. And again, if you're wanting to learn to tank and you do not want to touch the DK for some reason, you've got access to the Warden, there is absolutely nothing wrong with running a Warden tank. It's a very easy class to learn to tank on. You get almost everything you need, and the stuff you don't is still technically there. So it's actually a very good option.
There you go. Look at that. That's a good, solid choice for everyone. I think so, Nyx is my favorite.
Necromancer is the one I feel the weirdest about. So one of the big things is we've been talking about chains a lot. Mm-hmm. Necromancer chains actually mimic the Swarm Mother set a little bit. The chains require you to be hit in order to trigger. Now with Swarm Mother, you need to be blocking. With Necromancer, you just simply have to have Beckoning Armor up. And if you've got that active and you're hit by an attack, you'll pull them in. This is really awkward to me because it means you don't control when they come to you.
Truth.
And I'm still looking at this and going, I would still rather have leash slotted. Even though it's not as thematic, even though Beckoning Armor is also an armor resist buff, it's just awkward that it's like, okay, I can't control when they come to me. And as the tank, when the entire point is I want to control where people are, that's not a great thing. Now, the Necromancer does have a ranged CC. It's not quite as large as the Sorcs, and as far as I can tell, it does not have the self-heal built in anywhere, but it does have that same, you can just lock them down in a column. I love it. Let's see. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that this class does typically break a lot of the standard consideration for tanking in that. And like we were just saying with pulling things in it, not, you know, the ideal. Well, I don't want to say not the ideal time because it's another rotation to kind of learn. But like it definitely does break a lot of the traditional norms. And that has thrown people with a curveball, I think. But at the same time, fits kind of what they decided to do with the class, right? Like it's a lot of, hey, you're used to doing this. Well, here's, we're going to flip it on its head, kind of. Like this is a semi-different way of doing it that people have to adapt to.
Yeah. For what it is, I like it. My only gripe, and this is like the critique here of the Necromancer, is there are some choices here with the way the toolkit is set up that I'm not wild about. Fortunately, none of it is something that cannot be fixed by going out of class.
Yeah, like
it's not, oh, I have to, yeah, it's not that, oh, I have to give up all of these options to go out of class for something. It's like, these are actually viable options. So when I'm looking at Beckoning Armor and I'm looking at Silver Leash and I'm saying I want to use Silver Leash instead, it's not that Beckoning Armor doesn't work. It's that I don't think this works exactly the way, like, it's not going to do exactly what I need it to.
Fair.
if you can make, and the other side of this is, if you can make beckoning armor work for you as a necro tank, enjoy. It's seriously going to be useful. It's a single cast that continues to apply chains.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something you cannot get anywhere else. So, like, there's a legitimate reason that you'd set up the way it is, and it, there's a legitimate utility in it. And I'm not going to knock it and say this is bad. I am going to say it doesn't look as useful to me, even with the upsides.
That is very viable. I what you're saying is very, yeah. I've seen some people start to get in the swing of it now that it's been out for a little while and people have been playing it. So I'm hearing like an uptick in usage of it, but I think you're right. It definitely at first glance, and until you feel it out, until you find the use cases, like you said, Silver Leash might be a little bit better for what you're doing.
And to be fair, I think that having a class that is really different is useful, right?
Right.
There's a real danger here where you're looking at these things and saying, okay, well, we're going to try to take legitimately what I just said too. Like, let's look at the Nightblade and try to turn it into a DK and then go, well, this doesn't work. Of course it doesn't. It's a different class. Stuff like this, where even more so than with the Warden, forces you to look at and reevaluate how you play the role. So you're still doing the things you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But the tools you have to do it are different. The other two things we haven't gotten to, like, and these are just kind of characterizations, but the Necromancer is ridiculously durable.
Yeah.
Once you get the hang for it. It's got some fantastic self-heals. It's got a little bit more of a debuff focus. So you're reducing the target rather than you're building up your party members. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's a slightly different approach that fits thematically, but I think the big thing here is just this is a really durable class that does have nearly everything you could want, and that column CC is just something I freaking love, because I'm not a fan of talons, in case that didn't come across.
Noted.
So being able to just put the bone claws out there and just lock everything in a path up, it's really nice. Also, that skeletal colossus transform is insane.
Very cool on its own.
The res is going to be really useful if you're learning content. I'm not going to say what you call it, but frozen colossus is really nice. But that skeletal transform, I've seen in excess of 90,000 hit points on a low-level tank from that.
Yeah, it's really neat.
It really is. And it's really good, too. Like, you can activate this. You're getting a lot of resistance for a set period of time. And this is something, I think we skimmed over this. We weren't really talking about ultimates, but it is something you see with the DK also, where they've got something called magma armor, where they can soak a lot of damage for a short period of time. But, and this is a little bit like that, but this is a really thematic sort of, okay, well, you can take a ton of damage right now. I love it. I do actually really like the Necromancer, even if I'm not entirely sold on every piece of the toolkit.
I would agree. Speaking of toolkits, are we now ready to talk about the actual tools of the trade?
Yep.
Things you'll be using.
Wear heavy armor.
Wear
heavy armor.
No light. Well, actually, there are light armor tanks, though. Is that true?
Like, there. Oh man, that's going back a minute. Okay, so that's history, right? Light armor tanks are actually a piece of history. You're looking back at, I think, like the 2014 stuff, where it was. The difference in protection from light armor to heavy was closer. Like, it was a less significant difference.
Oh.
Now it's like light armor has half the stat values of heavy. I'm doing this from memory. I'd have to look to check. But it used to be, it was like 3/4 or something. So it was like, it was much closer. And what you ended up seeing was they'd be running light armor because the resource recovery for light armor used to be stronger. So you'd run light armor because it was just like you'd have a ton of resources and it just didn't make sense. Also back then you could permablock because your blocking would not interrupt stam recovery. So like, that was a different time. If you've got somebody that's running a light armor tank today, they are making, I was gonna say, they're making a bold choice. They're not necessarily making one that can never work. But they are making a very bold choice because they're betting that they can use something like a heavy shield focus mm-hmm. to soak off incoming damage faster than it's coming in. And this is something that's absolutely viable for normal content. It's viable for non-DLC vet content if you know what you're doing. When you start getting into DLC vet content or trial content, that approach is going to start running up against some hard walls. But I'm not going to say it's impossible. Right. Yep. I'm just going to strongly discourage you from trying. Yeah. But I'm not going to say it's impossible because I know for a fact there are people who can make it work. But it's not going to be easy. And you're going to be running up against, you're not going to have stuff in the toolkit because you're not going to be as durable as a tank should be, in scare quotes.
And I think I ran into this yesterday on stream too. Someone wanted to do something obscure, and in after what we've talked about in this and like self-healing and stuff like that, it obviously doesn't sound as obscure, but the way they worded it was a little bit more of a contrast. They're like, I want to be a tank and a healer. And I was like, hey, look, that's totally viable. If you want to get into the nitty gritty of things, like you can try to start working, you know, because again, tanks and their self-healing and stuff. But I think I like what you just said right there, especially when you're starting out tanking, stick with the bigger, easier options. So probably start with heavy armor. And as you learn it more, then get to the more obscure outer edges, because that's kind of the fun thing about this game, right? Like you can, you know, you can pick up the archetype and then you go and take it your weird way. So who did we talk about earlier that was like a really hard, like a Templar tank, right? Like they're not the most obvious choice. But, you know, if you already have a DK and a Warden tank and a Necro tank and you're just going down the list, I mean, sure, making those more obscure options is definitely fun. And why not try a light armor tank someday? Because like Stark said, it's not maybe the most obvious and most recommended approach, but you can make it work if you have the knowledge set to go along with it. Yeah.
The one thing I do caution on this one where it's like, OK, I'm going to run this weird thing for a tank is make sure the people you're running with know.
True.
We talk a lot about like the group finder is just an introduction of going, okay, here, you can just jump in, you can do content. And as the tank, this is really true. Please do not jump in as a light armor tank when you don't have it down yet onto random players that don't know what you're going to be doing.
Great call out.
That's going to be miserable for everybody involved,
especially you, because you will get some profanity coming at you when you, I mean, if it's friends, especially like if you're taking friends with you and you're saying, hey, look, I'm going to try this new build, and then they're going to be, I mean, if they're good friends, they're going to be super understanding, you know, if you, you know, have to work at it a couple times, you know, depending on what you guys are actually doing. But yeah, like Stark said, you're taking it into a random dungeon finder. They are expecting you to do the bare minimum of what, you know, tanking is. And, you know, if you're doing experimental builds, probably not the right place for that.
Now, something about that we sort of skimmed over here, because we've talked about, people will ask you about hybrids occasionally, and tanks are one of the times when you can really do hybrid builds, but it's not what what people are usually thinking of, because you're running magicka and you're running stamina on the same pool. The reason is because the way scaling works, you want to max out your damage. We've said all of this many times, except as a tank, you really don't care. You don't care what your damage is, and you don't really care what your heals are either. Like when it's like, oh, hey, I've got Breath of Life on my Templar tank, I don't care how much that heals for. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for the secondary effects. I'm looking for stuff that applies scaling debuffs or buffs. So again, like we're talking about things like brutality, we're talking about things like sorcery, we're talking about things like with the you know, major fracture or, you know, major ward, stuff like this, where it really won't matter what your stats are. You simply apply the modifier. And when you get into this, you're like, okay, well, I can recover from both of these pools at the same time, and I can spend out of either of these pools at any given moment. And suddenly it becomes very appealing to simply have, I've got some stam abilities and I've got some mag abilities, and I'm picking back and forth based on what I need at this moment. Because more than any other class, tanks don't really run on rotations. You'll try to maintain uptime on buffs, but you're not worried about, oh, I need to use this buff, and then put damage down, because that damage doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about, you know, like hybrid builds not being viable, this is the exception. You want to put a lot of points into health. You want to beef that up. And ideally, you want around 30 to 35,000 health as a tank. But then after that, you just want to put points into both your stam and your mag. And you want to get those both up so that you can use both pools. We're talking about heavy armor specifically. This is something, if you look at the heavy armor passives, it focuses on recovering to both resource pools. And it focuses on durability. Like, it increases your resistances, it increases your max health, increases your health recovery, which we don't really care about, but it is increasing your health anyway. But then it's also increasing your resource recovery when you take damage. And this makes heavy armor really nice for your tanks, because again, like, you're beefier, but also you're getting resources back. When we're talking about, okay, well, we can put you in light armor, you can put you in medium armor too. Like, medium armor tanks also are a thing that exists, and it's not as easy. You're sacrificing the second resource pool. So a light armor tank, like, yes, you can create a light armor tank, but you're not going to have the stam recovery, and you are going to need stamina.
Tanking is definitely a different approach. And like you said, I can see why, you know, it often is the when people yell exception to the whole, you know, can't be hybrid sort of thing. It definitely makes sense with tanking. So,
yeah. Also worth noting here, when we're talking about hybrids, like, you don't need to do a tank healer. That's a lot more viable in PvP.
Definitely. Yeah.
If you're wanting to run a, the irony is, if you're wanting to run a healer in PvP, you might want to look at stuff you'd normally think about for tanking, like heavy armor and sword and board, stuff like that, where it's like, okay, I'm going to set my character so I can take a lot of punishment, because unlike ads, when players realize you're the healer, you become the target.
Yeah. So
and that's the most effective taunt of all. It's like, oh, hey, they're casting heals.
Was that a resto staff I saw? Kill them.
Yep. So, like, that's the ultimate hybrid there, is just go to PvP, taunt the other players with your resto staff. Yeah. It doesn't have a taunt, but they will know.
Good point.
Yeah. But yeah, with that said about armor, one thing you probably will do is the 5-1-1, right? Like, five heavy, one light, one medium. Even more so than with the other classes, because, or with the other roles, because in this case, you're using both pools. You're getting benefit from that. So absolutely viable and actually really useful if you can do it. If you want to do seven heavy, there's nothing wrong with that. But keep your eyes open, keep your options open. Enjoy yourself.
Right.
So with that, we've been talking about sword and board a lot intermittently. You need this. Nobody else should touch it. You need it. You need pierce armor, and the rest of the skill line isn't going to hurt you, but you really need pierce armor. Also, we're talking about ultimate generation a minute ago. I think, one of the low slash morphs, heroic slash, actually still applies minor heroism. So if you want, you know, rapid ultimate generation in combat as a tank, like, that's right there. I think it also applies a minor root debuff to the target, so like, they can't run away as fast, as a minor snare. So like, it's actually really useful for that. And I'm saying minor as in it's not a particularly significant debuff, but not because it's actually a named minor debuff. I'm sorry, that was a little bit awkward there.
I mean, I get you.
Yeah, but another one that's really nice is you do actually have absorb. I think it's absorb magicka, where it. Incoming spells will heal you. Like, there's some really nice stuff in the sword and board tree just for keeping yourself up and moving. The final one, this is one we've actually kind of gone over all this stuff with, is the ice staff. There's two things I skipped earlier because I was focusing on elemental blockade. It's a nice lockdown at range. Crushing shock is a ranged interrupt. This is something you can usually do when you're close up just by bashing somebody. But even if you, and this is something you will see on the tank, or sorry, on DPS also, because Crushing Shock is just, it's useful. But as a tank, if you need to interrupt somebody and you can't get over there, you can, you, and you've got actually, I think any destruction staff, you can use Crushing Shock to just tag the target and tell them to stop that.
Oh. You know,
they can hang out for a sec, you'll be over there, but for the moment, they need to stop doing what they're doing. The last one, and this is specifically the Frost staff, is Frost Clench. It applies a single target immobilization. This can actually be really useful in PvP. it looks like it could be useful for PvE tanking. It's not as much because most of the time when you'd use it, you could just lock them down and everybody around them with blockade. But in some rare circumstances, it might be worth remembering it exists simply because you might need to lock one ad in place while you move the rest off for some reason.
Yeah.
A little bit of a weird edge case situation, and I can't think of any scenarios where I'd want to do that. But it is something to remember.
Very interesting. I feel like I've learned, I feel like my brain has hit the point of like, ah, that's a lot of tanking info.
Yeah, it's in comparison to the, like, the reason to do these three episodes the way we've done them is because like they are very different approaches to the game. All three require you to look at the environment, look at the encounters in entirely different ways. And there is a lot to be said for being able to say, okay, I've done all three. Even if you're not good at them all,
yeah,
being able to say, I've done all three, because then you can sit back and you can understand what the other players are trying to do. And even sometimes you can offer insight into how they can improve. So it's part of the reason for this, like, in coming to this trio of episodes is... yeah, these are all very different games, basically.
Well, and I think, like you just said, that that's kind of a lot of the approach. Now, admittedly, someone that hasn't tanked themselves yet, I think it's still very useful, like you just said, to learn it. And that's kind of the approach I'm always trying to get people to see on stream is the... try it all roughly before you either A, poo-poo anything, or B, just give up on the concept of it and say, I gotta do the meta. You know, it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of viability in this game in many different approaches. So getting outside the comfort zone is key.
Yeah. Well, in the meta, in the case of tanking, the meta is really aggravating for me because because again, I mentioned it earlier, it's the Alkosh setup, right?
Oh, yeah.
Usually it's Ebon Alkosh or it's Turek's Pact Alkosh. The problem with this is Alkosh is actually a really good debuff, right? Mm-hmm. But it's actually a much better DPS set. Because it's got a heavy DOT tick on it that fires every time you take a synergy. So if you're a Stam DPS and you're up there and you're pounding on the boss and somebody throws balls or they throw shards and you get them before the tank can, that DOT tick actually stacks with itself. Like, this is something Zai has tested and keeps coming back and saying, wait, you can stack this. It's crazy. It's a really good outgoing damage setup if you can use it, but it's very difficult to actually be in a place where you can use it as a player. Like, it's maintaining Alkosh uptime just for the debuff alone takes considerable time and effort. And a lot of people who look at Alkosh and say, oh, this is the only thing to run, it's very useful in trials, right?
Yep.
Because you've got 8 DPS that are pounding on the boss. But you'll see people that are like, okay, I'll just use this and I'll take it into dungeons. And it's like, you're asking a lot from the healer. You know, like, you're asking a lot of attention from the healer for something that's only going to benefit 2 other players. It's not going to increase their DPS that much. So it's like, I understand the use of the set and I actually applaud it in some context. And I do think the weapon glow effects look really cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm still prone to using that set on a tank when I can, simply because, oh, it looks cool, but it gets pulled out of context and said, okay, well, you use this all the time, which no. Turek's Pact is actually still really good just across the board because it increases the effectiveness of your enchants. And also the infused trait on weapons for tanks, because again, you're beefing up your enchants. And with the recent changes, I think it was with, it's either with Elsewhere or it was with Wrathstone. They changed the one-handed enchants to have a reduced effect, have half the effect of a two-handed enchant. There's actually a point where you might want to run a staff or a two-hander, or even in some rare circumstances, a bow on your back bar as the tank, and use that to then apply the Crusher debuff rather than doing it with your one hand. If you're doing that with Turegs and Infused, you'll actually get higher debuffs off of the Crusher enchant. So there's actually a point to that. It's just kind of, it takes a couple of steps.
The world of tanking as we know it. I don't need some sort of fun outro there for that. It's a very interesting thing. The necromancer could very much get me into tanking. I could see that. Like, I could see myself starting to learn it through him. And I did, to follow up from many episodes ago, I really got into a questing kick with the necromancer, as I said I was going to. And I haven't done it in a couple days, but I really like it. It's funny how you just need a class that speaks to you to get you into some of these things. So again, that's why I could see myself really going and trying it out, you know, on occasion with this guy. The Bone Colossus form.
Bone Colossus form looks so cool on Arnagonian.
Oh, yeah. It does. Yeah. It has a Khajiit one that I have not seen, to be honest.
So. I've seen it, but I haven't seen it since the PTS.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. The Argonian, like, I finally broke down and rolled an Argonian because I've had the Werewolf Lord Polymorph for ages, and that looks really good on an Argonian. So I was like, okay, well, I need one eventually. I don't want to race change any of the characters I actually play regularly into
right.
one. So it's like, okay, well, I'll make a new necromancer that's an Argonian. It looks really cool on that. But the Bone Colossus transform looks fantastic.
Stark will be 30 accounts deep soon with all his characters. He'll be the new Inkling with you know, 36 characters.
Oh, God, that just scares the hell out of me.
Oh, you're closer than you think.
No, I'm actually at 30 characters now. No, that's not what I meant. That's the part where Ink is, I think it's 45 characters. Is like, or no, he's probably more than that now because he's got necromancers. It's like,
the fact that you're keeping up so quickly is scaring me.
Well, to be fair, only 16 of them are max level.
Okay. Well, on that note, maybe we should bid people farewell for today, because I unfortunately have to get out of here in a minute. Stark, seriously, thank you for sharing all that wonderful information with us, because that was a lot of great tanking info. And like I said, if you guys are interested in like a part two to some of these at some point, we probably should. I'm guessing next week, and you, Stark, and I will talk about this. But we should probably do a look at elsewhere now that we have had the launch on both PC and console. That just happened this last Tuesday for the console players. So we should probably do kind of a recap and see if there's any new patch notes or anything like that that come out, anything we need to really talk about, or just kind of recap the launch in general, because we really haven't talked about dragons at all. So
they're so fun.
They really are.
Yeah.
Well, let's plan on doing that. We'll bid you guys adieu for this week. As a reminder, if you want to come hang out on Discord, Stark and I are in the server there. It is discord.gg/KDS. Nice and easy for you. Like I said, people were sharing some feedback in the feedback channel. Please do, by all means, do that. Or send stuff to kyledemsterstudios@gmail.com. We get those emails and I'll share them with Stark. And sometimes they make it into the show depending on what sort of content we're doing at the time. But please, by all means, do that. I'm over at twitter.com/KyleDemsterSTU. Stark, you're at twitter.com/MichaelJSchwartz. And you can find us both goofing around on the stream if Stark is awake at the time that I'm streaming.
Well, I'm actually going to be going back to, yeah, because I've been on a sort of a weird schedule this last week. So I'm going to be back on the stream probably a lot more frequently in the next coming weeks, because that was like, this week has been weird across the board for everything. So
I was going to give you kudos, because I feel like you've actually like made an effort to be there. I noticed, and I appreciate it. So it's really nice to have you there answering questions, helping people with stuff. That's at twitch.tv/KyleDemsterStudios. I think I usually do that one before Twitter and my brain backfired. Twitter.tv. I quit. twitch.tv/KyleDemsterStudios. Can only get it right once a week, the title. But that's Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern time, which means I have to go prep for a stream here in like about an hour.
No, I got to go pass out for about 5 hours.
Okay, so
I'll try to be back. I'll try to